We are back here in Indianapolis at the NFL Combine. Big Blue Kickoff live on Giants.com. And we have another guest. We're joined by Mark Dominic, former NFL general manager and, of course, a great analyst for ESPN. Mark, thanks a lot for giving us the time today.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Great, fantastic. Let's start with this. You know, you obviously are very well-traveled in the circles of the front office.
Yeah.
And, you know, we haven't anybody actually do anything on the field yet here at the Combine, but that doesn't mean that general managers and coaches and owners aren't working behind the scenes trying to do some business. What's going on? What are you hearing?
Well, there's a lot that's going on behind the scenes, as you know. I mean, the best thing about the Combine is it's a week full of just nonstop talking football to everybody. And although it can kind of sometimes be like a family reunion because you're getting everybody back together again, I love the daytime right now where, you know, the players are going through the heights and weights, and but it's a chance to interview and then really kind of interact with the other teams. One of the key things when I was GM of the Bucks was I would want to walk around to every one of the 32 other GMs and just sit down and have a face-to-face conversation, because we don't do that in this society anymore, do we? I mean, we never have time to really spend some quality time with each other.
Everything's a text, right?
It's, exactly. You guys BC. That's exactly right.
And or a tweet or whatever the case may be.
One of those things. And so I always felt like you get a good pulse of not only if there's a trade that possibly happened, and this is where trades start to brew a little bit, but also what they're thinking in free agency, anything that's going on. And then, of course, we got a chance to see these guys work out in a little bit. But I think the main thing is waiting for the medical reports from our doctors to find out exactly who has what, because it's absolutely dramatically changes your draft board when you get these medical reports back.
So, you know, with the Giants and a number of other teams that have made a coaching change, now it's kind of a new dynamic for Jerry Reese and, of course, now working with Ben McAdoo. Have you ever been in a situation where you've come into an organization, new head coach, kind of young? How do you, you know, kind of give us an idea of how you think this dynamic is working with Jerry Reese and a very young and upcoming Ben McAdoo?
Well, I am a huge Ben McAdoo fan. When I was in Tampa Bay, twice I tried to steal him from the Packers and twice I got denied.
Wow, okay.
Because I wanted him.
Good to know.
Yeah, we wanted him as our offensive coordinator back in 2010, 2011, and they just would not let him out of contract. And so I've always watched Ben McAdoo and thought that this was going to happen. And, in fact, you know, as soon as Coach Coughlin stepped away, I thought for sure, and I even went out there and said, look, Ben McAdoo's going to be the next head coach of the New York Giants. He's just too good, and you just don't let an offensive play caller go who had success. So I like the dynamics. I like the addition of Martin Mayhew to the front office. I think that's going to be a very strong addition for them and what Jerry Reese is doing. But just when you talk to people around the league, but when you really hear Ben McAdoo talk and you talk to Kevin Abrams or anybody within the organization, there is a great vibe going on, and you got to appreciate that. And you know that there's stability because he came through the facility. And it's a guy that you're comfortable with. You already know. You already know what his communication style is going to be. And he's already been a leader of the offensive side. So you've seen him in a leadership position, which is one of the biggest questions you have to ask yourself is, can this guy retain these guys and get them to want to dial in and pay attention to him?
Yeah, Mark, not only a new coach, but the Giants are also going to have a very different roster next season, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And I guess that's the best place to start. In free agency in general, who do you think is going to escape the franchise tag and not get extended between now and March 9th on the defensive side of the ball that could be considered premium players that might be available for the Giants to attack in free agency?
Well, you have to look at the teams that have a lot of guys, right? And two teams that come to mind that are
Denver.
Playing. Yeah, exactly. Would you stop taking every
sorry.
One of my – no, I'm just kidding. You're spot on, because I think there's two teams that play great defense this year, and I always want to look at those teams first, right? And the two teams I think of that play great defense that have a lot of guys is Denver. Malik Jackson's not signing back there. He's going to hit a home run in free agent a lot more than people realize. And there's a lot of money to be out there. But Malik Jackson's a guy you have to target and assume that they're going to get Osweiler figured out and they're going to get Von Miller figured out. And they're going to have to let one of these good players go, and that's Malik. And I think I look at, honestly, the L.A. Rams. I had to almost say St. Louis there. It kind of threw me off for a second. But the L.A. Rams, because when you look at L.A., they've got a lot of good players, whether it's Mark Barron or Will Hayes. You know, you look at Tremaine Johnson or, you know, Janoris Jenkins. That's a lot of guys. And you got to look at those four guys and say, look, they can all help a defense, whether you see Barron as that linebacker that can get out in space and kind of improve there, whether you think Janoris might be the cornerback that can kind of plug in there, whether you keep Prince Nakamura or not. I just think those are two teams I would certainly have my eye on because of the quality and quantity of free agents they have.
One other guy on Denver I want to ask you about is Danny Trevathan, a player that John Elway said is a priority to bring back along with Malik Jackson. But, of course, money's money. You can only fit so many guys under the cap. That's how it goes. Do you think he's going to be available when free agency starts on March 9th?
I do think he'll hit the market. I would be surprised. And Trevathan's going to be the right fit for the right type of team because, to me, the one area you've got to look at for Trevathan is the fact is how good is he in coverage. He's a great downhill box player, and you got to like that. But a lot of times in free agency, if you're a different organization, you want to sit there and say, can I find that guy in the draft? There's one thing where if you feel like he can cover and do things like, let's say, Miles Jack here in this draft class, who can do just about anything, right? And is
everybody is in love with this kid. I'm going to print up Miles Jack t-shirts and like make a fortune,
Anita,
before I leave here.
Everybody is
in love with this kid.
And you can put him in the top five of the draft, and that's where he's going to go.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, he's going high because he can just do too much. When you watch his highlight tape, you think he's a DB. And
how rare is that?
I
was talking to a head coach yesterday who said if he gets him, he's going to have him play running back for he could play running back,
well, Mark,
too.
Yeah, I was watching his game against BYU. He's covering wide receivers
that's
in the slot.
That's what I mean. You actually put him out in the slot.
Yeah.
This is a very rare player, rare athlete that's going to be out there. And the injury that he had, to me, I've seen a lot more severe ones that you're worried about coming in because this has happened to a lot of players in the National Football League where I think they come back. So Giants fans, I'm afraid unless you're making a move, I'd be shocked to see if he's going to be wearing some blue and white.
All right, so the Giants are going to be pretty – we're all anticipating Giants fans, anticipating the Giants to be really big players. I mean, kind of share with us, when you've got $58, $60 million to play with, I mean, just how exciting is it to kind of venture into free agency? So kind of share with us, that type of dough and what's out there and kind of what the mindset you think is right now with this front office.
Well, I think the biggest thing you have to do, and I learned this kind of on the job training, but I think the number one thing you have to do in free agency is ask and answer the question, why is this guy a free agent? And I know it sounds so simplistic, doesn't it? It's like, well, why is he a free agent? But if you don't get to it, and I got burned by a player that I signed that was a corner off of a team that did not have good secondary play. And I turned around and signed him and go back and look and go, well, why would they ever let him go? What was I thinking? But at the same point, I signed Vincent Jackson, who was going through the contract issues with San Diego. They weren't sure if they wanted to tag him. It was a battle with A.J. Smith at the time. And I thought, here's a number one wide receiver. Let's go get him because I could answer that question. And so when you have this much money into the Giants, you just got to be very careful and go to the Malik Jackson, Danny Trevathans and say, look, they can only pay so many guys, or – maybe because they see Trevathan as a first and second down linebacker, they cap him at $5 or $6 million a year. Where maybe the agent's thinking 8 or 9 right now, and realizing that market's going to come back. So you gotta be able to answer that question. But you have to proceed cautiously. But it's not. I don't like the sense that you just have to draft only and it's all homegrown and you can't go out in free agency. I don't believe that. I just think you have to be cautious how you venture through it, especially when you have that much money.
And I got to imagine it's tricky because GMs will put a value on a player. You say, I think this guy, in terms of making the most production out of every dollar I spend, is worth this amount. But at the same time, there's so many dollars in free agency and, frankly, probably not enough players that are worth that amount of money. So at some point, you're probably going to have to go over what you think a player is actually worth to get him on your roster because of the competition. How do you draw that line of where too much is too much and where, all right, I'll pay the premium, this guy's worth it?
Well, I think you're seeing one of your rivals in the Philadelphia Eagles attack that right now in the terms that they're deciding to take their money and give it to their own players when they have a little bit of leverage in terms of 1 year left on their contract and saying, look, instead of going out there buying guys we're not sure about or guys we don't know, let's just really focus on the guys we like and that we're going to keep, whether it's Lane Johnson, the tight ends, whatever it is. And so I like the Philadelphia approach, and they're paying at a premium. But at the same point, I think a lot of clubs have not come to grips with what you're talking about, and I think that's critical. And that's something I've been trying to talk a lot about publicly is there is so much cap space out there right now. There's only such a pool of players. The middle class now in the NFL is finally going to get paid. It was something they were hoping the CBA would do. And at the early beginning, we just saw the rich got richer, the star players, which is fine. I was part of that too. Star players get the big money. The 6 or 5 year veteran who's a good quality player, veteran minimum to $1 million. Well, now at this point, there's just going to be too much money out there. Those guys are actually going to raise, and it's going to take a little bit of a shift in the mind to say, I know you saw him as a $1.5 or $2 million player, but in this market, he's $3-$3.5 million. And congratulations to players. I mean, that's a great thing.
Yeah.
But that's the thing that's happening, especially with this, because when those tags come down, there's going to be a lot less players out there, and that's always frustrating, especially when you have cash and cap to go and attack it.
I do want to get your thoughts on the quarterback situation. Not that the Giants are in need of one, but maybe the possibility of somebody trading up for a Goff or a Wentz. From what I understand, some hefty expectations that possibly these could be eventually Pro Bowl players. And we know, of course, Giants fans have been very fortunate to have Eli Manning at the helm where they haven't really had to deal with something like that. But do you feel that either of these two quarterbacks have that much star power, that much excitement around them and expectation that somebody might trade up with Tennessee?
I do feel like Goff will be that guy. And a lot of people today wanted to say, well, these 9-inch hands. And
oh,
I'm like, whatever.
On.
You know, it's
That's
all
ridiculous.
Where you hold the ball. It's not how big your hand is. It's all about where you position the ball. And you
feel. So Kurt Warner, I talked about Kurt Warner yesterday. Kurt Warner had some of the smallest hands. Granted, yes, he played indoors in St. Louis, and of course he played in Arizona, which helped him big time. But he did. He gripped the ball really high up to the point where he would create a callus.
Yeah.
on his index finger because of the way that he gripped the ball and how he would be able.
You know, it's funny. And back in the 90s, Troy Aikman talked about he had his whole hand over the laces where they're almost in his palm. So you can adjust that based on hand size.
It is, and it's one of the things at the combine that a lot of people don't realize we do. But we take the quarterbacks when they get on the field and go throw. The first thing they do is hold the ball up, and then we have a camera walk all the way around him and actually see how he holds the football.
Interesting.
Because that's how you kind of decide whether the hand's going to become an issue or not. But back to your point on Jared Goff, I'm a Goff guy. Like, this is my favorite quarterback. Last year, I was a Mariota guy. This was my at this point last year, I thought he was the number one pick in the draft. He was number two, and they both turned out to be good quarterbacks. It just didn't work out for the two head coaches. But anyway, for the quarterbacks in this class, I like Carson Wentz. I am not on this Carson Wentz train as fast as this thing's moving down the station. I'm excited about what he can do and who he is, and I think there's a lot of possibility. I'm more of a Paxton Lynch, and Paxton struggled a little bit in the second half.
Interesting.
But I think when you see him throw, when you see him run, when you see how athletic he is for his size, he's going to change people's minds in a blink. In the next 48 hours, you're going to be hearing a lot more about Paxton Lynch possibly being the number two quarterback. That's my personal opinion after you watch him throw and not watch him work out.
I had I had a scout yesterday tell me, if you want to win now, you draft Goff. If you want to win 5 years from now, at the end of the day, in regard to who potentially would be the best quarterback coming out of this draft class, it's going to be Wentz.
I've heard some people say Lynch, too, to be quite honest
with
you.
Yeah, I like Carson Wentz. I just think that the jump he's going to make is – this is where I'm not penalizing him for being at a small school, and I think he's absolutely a first-round quarterback. But he's not – he's making a massive leap, and we're going to see that out there a little bit when he actually throws, and that's part of the reason why we want him to throw is to see how is it when he throws to a really fast receiver. You know, and this is not a shot against North Dakota State. He's done a great job there, and – brought his left tackle with him, which is fantastic here to the combine. But the reality is everything's double speed. It's not you're not playing in the SEC. You're going right from North Dakota State straight to the National Football League. And I worry that that transition in terms of the windows that you have are so tight that it makes it very hard. And that's where I sit there and say he might be really good, but I just think you better have a lot of patience. And I think it's got to be more of a team, Anita, that doesn't have to say if it doesn't work out, they can survive. But you can't – I just don't know if you could put all those eggs in that basket.
Did you have the same concerns with Joe Flacco when he came out of Delaware?
Yeah, I did. I would sit there and say I was – now, at that time, back in 2008, I was the director of pro, so I wasn't as heavily involved in the draft. But, there was those concerns that you had. But that's where Flacco went, was more mid-round in the teens, and that to me made
a
lot
19.
More
sense.
Yeah, 17 or 19 in that range. I'm sure you're probably – nailed that, Anita. I don't think you're even guessing. You're like, I know it's 19. I'm just kind of acting.
Well,
like
because the Ravens traded down and then they traded back up for him.
That's right.
And I heard Bill Parcells tore the phone out of the wall at the Dolphins facility when that happened because Bill wanted him in Miami. Mm-hmm.
Mark, I got two quickies for you.
Yep.
GM's perspective on figuring out whether or not you want to draft a guy like Jalen Smith, whom if he's not hurt is probably a top five, top seven pick, but now he's coming off a torn ACL. Similar to the situation I guess we had with Todd Gurley last year at running back. As a GM, how do you parse the injury and the production and figure out where this guy should be on your board?
Well, this is where the physical is critical. The best example I can give you is when I traded for Darrell Revis because he was coming off the ACL. And the reason why I traded for Darrell Revis in that year's draft is I wasn't a big Dean Milner fan, and we really needed to improve our secondary. We were number 32 in pass defense. And so Darrell coming off that knee, like Jalen, you wanted to see exactly how the knee was healing, you know, in terms of how the band was attached, how much healing's going on within that knee. And if it's looking the way I felt with Darrell that he was going to be able to come back, then you don't even second guess it, because I think Todd Gurley just showed you if you have a plan. And the Giants were great with Odell Beckham when he came out. You guys know. You lived it. And I think that when you know you have a medical staff that you can trust that is going to make good long-term decisions for your players, then you sit there and say, okay, I can take this guy. And if he's there, he's a phenomenal football player. He's great, and he has a chance. I mean, it's going to be close, but this top 10, it's going to move around a little bit, but it's a good draft class, and it's not just a one-round deep draft class. It's good, and all these underclassmen that came out only helped, you know, the Giants in the second or third round.
Final question for me on free agency, then I guess I need to wrap it up. The three Giant players that are going to be free agents on defense, JPP, Robert Ayers, Prince Mukamara, you talked about how this market is going to be a little bit different than what we've seen in years past. What do you think the market's going to be like for those three guys? How in demand are they going to be?
Ooh, put me on the spot, right? I personally think Amukamara is not as popular as I think he hopes he is. I think he's a good cornerback in the National Football League. Do I think he's going to get anywhere near Maxwell money? I'd be shocked. I would be. Now, this is not – it's just my personal opinion of him and as a football player. I think there's going to be some interest, but I think it's a guy that if I'm the Giants, I can sit back and say, go hit the market and then see how bad you want to be in New York. Robert Ayers, I think, will have interest in terms of a role player and probably find it into his niche there. So I think there'll be some there. And with JPP, it's a shame. You guys probably talk about it a lot more than I've ever had to talk about it.
Yeah.
But I don't know if there will be any.
Interesting.
Interest. I think he'll get a one-year deal, whether it stays at home there and tries to show what he can become. But I think that's the direction it's heading for JPP, in my personal opinion.
This is a question for you personally before we do let you go, and that is, you know, now you've been a broadcaster and you do such a phenomenal job with ESPN. Do you miss that? Do you kind of miss that front office?
Like,
well, I mean, because it's got to be interesting for you here. You're covering it. You're reporting on it, as opposed to being that guy in that room asking those questions or having the discussions in regard to trying to, get a trade together. Or, you know, I'm just curious. Is
you
that
absolutely miss. I miss the team building aspect of it. I don't miss the cell phone on the side of the bed that calls you at 3:30 in the morning, going, "What just happened?" And you never. I mean, your job. To Jerry Reese's credit, I think he handles everybody very well. He's a great friend of mine. No one realizes how much stress this job is and how hard it is. And I loved it. And do I miss it? Yes, I absolutely miss it. And I'm enjoying what's going on with the media. I like to be an analyst and talk about football and talk about all the things that I saw from my perspective. For me, it just would come back to being the right fit. That's the only way I'm going to go back, because I've been through some frustrations where the quarterback didn't pan out with Josh Freeman, and that was that really set the franchise back. And it was disappointing because here was a young man that had tons of talent, that had two really phenomenal years, but just could not get off the roller coaster. And because of that, it affects everybody. And so, you know, you see it from a different perspective, but it's good. And I feel good here because they're my friends still. I still talk to them all. We have a really good relationship, and I try to work with other GMs to kind of help them through anything I can. But at the same point, it would have to be a really great opportunity, or my wife would probably shoot me. So.
Well, thank you so much for spending time with
thank
us
you,
this
Mark.
Afternoon. Wealth of information, and thanks for sharing for all the Giants fans out there, too.
I love talking football.
Appreciate
anytime.
Appreciate it.